Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah in the middle of Lamed Bet and Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Ein pochatim et ner mipnei shoseh kli." One cannot be pochet the ner because he's making it into a kli. Machloket Rashi and Tosafot. What exactly is being done here? According to Rashi, he takes from the craftsman, from the pottery maker, he takes a circle of clay and then he punches his fist into that clay. So he hollows out the clay in order to utilize it as a lamp. Now, he does this, but does not finalize or do the final part of making the nair, which would be to fire it up in the kiln. So he only does the part of making it into a kli, but he doesn't do anything else. That's the way Rashi describes it. And Tosafot says, v'teima im kein epshita dasur, that it's clearly asur, v'afilu eno se kli gamur, mikom akom asur latchilet akli. If Rashi is talking about taking the raw material and then putting your fist into it to hollow it out to make the lamp, that's the creation of a kli. And that's pashut, that the creation of a kli is asur on Yom Tov. Here, we're talking about metakin kli, we're talking about some sort of finalization of the process, or not complete finalization of the process. So Tosafot says that what Rashi describes here is way too pshita, and that, of course, that would be problematic. So therefore, Tosafot explains that what they do is when they heat up or they fire up the pottery, the clay in the kiln, what they do is they have a hollow area. The problem is that when you fire it up in the kiln, there's a possibility that it will collapse inward. So they put stuffing in the inside or in the hole or the toch of the kli to hold it open. And they begin the process of firing the kli. Once it's hardened slightly, they take the kli out and they remove that stuffing, the things that are on the inside, and then they finish up the firing in the kiln. So over here, we're talking about ein pochatim et ner mipnei shoseh kli. Tosafot says, v'acharaf yato k'tzat mesalkin oto shibitocho. They take out that stuffing that's inside of it, and that's equivalent, or the quasi gemar hakli, because the kli is somewhat hardened, and you've taken out the stuffing, and now it can be used, but the true process, the true completion of the process, is to finish up the firing in the kiln. So Rashi says is that you made it into a kli by punching your fist in it, but you didn't fire it in the kiln. Tosafot says it's in the process of being fired in the kiln, but the midway process where you're taking out the stuffing and not finishing off the firing in the kiln. Ve'ein osim pechamim b'yom tov. You can't make charcoal on Yom Tov. Ve'ein chutchim et aptila. And you can't cut a wick on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda omer chutcha ba'ur. You can use fire to cut the wick. The Gemara will discuss what exactly that means. Mantano tepchita ner monohu. Who's the one who says that this unfinished product or partially finished product is considered to be a kli? So I'll have two opinions in the Amoraim. Amar Rav Yosef, Rabbi Meir, he. Rav Yosef says the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, de Tanyo, that we have a Tosefta in Kelim, which says, kli cheres, mei matai mikabel tuma. A earthenware utensil, when does it mikabel tuma? Mishin nigmar amelachto, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says when its work is completed or finished. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, when you fire it in the kiln. So Rabbi Meir is obviously talking about a part of the process before that. So Rabbi Meir says that gemar melachto, when the workmanship is done, that's when the kli is mekabel tuma. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, and halacha is like him, that it only becomes a kli once you fire it in the kiln and you've completely finished it. But Rabbi Meir believes that gemar melacha for the kli is sufficient to be called a kli, and therefore he'll be the author of our Mishnah. Amar le Abaye. Abaye queries his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, Mimai. How do you know that's true? Dilmad kan lo kama Rabbi Meir hotam ela dechazi likubuli beimide. Over there, because it has a receptacle in which you can use it. Meaning, by the case of the kli cheres, you have a receptacle in which you can place items. So fine, you maybe can't use it for liquids. You can't use it for items that are a little pernicious because it hasn't been fired in the kiln and it will cause it to deteriorate. But you can put dry goods in there without any problem. On the other hand, of Ahocha, in our case, by the lamp, which is a very small item, and the hole or the receptacle is very small, the Maichazi, the Kulebe, what are you going to put inside of it? If you don't put oil for a lamp inside of it, what else would you put inside of it? Gemara says, Pshite, you could put inside of it coins. You can store little copper coins. That was the smallest denomination in the coinage system where these copper small coins, and you can store them inside of there, so it does have utility outside of being a lamp, and therefore you could use it even if it wasn't necessarily fired in the kiln according to Rashi, or finished being fired in the kiln according to Tosafot. Ikid Amrei. Others say, Amar Rav Yosef, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadoki, that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, but not Rabbi Meir. The Tanan. How do we know that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok is the author of the Mishnah? Because we have a Mishnah. Ilfasin charaniyot tehorot ba'olamet utmeot b'masazav. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok omer af tehorot masazav lefish lo nigmira melachtan. So these ilfasin charaniyot, which the Gemara is going to go back and explain them, but Rashi tells us that these are unfinished pots. Rashi calls them kiarot. They're some sort of bowl, and he calls them the kiarot shebnei ayarot. These are the bowls of the people in the smaller cities, not in the large cities, but in the smaller cities. And they're not so makpid that their kelim are so nice. And therefore, once the bowl has been laid out or flattened out, then they'll utilize it for eating meat on it, even though it hasn't been pushed in, meaning that the internal side, it hasn't had a toch made of it, and even though it hasn't been fired in the kiln. So they use it in this unfinished state because they're not so makpid, they're not so fancy, and therefore they would utilize it in that state. And along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok and says, no, you have to finish it. Finish it over here means more than what the Tanakhama says. Now the Tanakhama is saying that you don't even have to have the chokek, you don't even have to make the internal receptacle in it, and you don't even have to fire it in the kiln. Along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok and says, no, you have to be finished its melacha. Well, finishing its melacha in this case would be to make it into a receptacle. So now, what is the question with regards to tumata mate? Now, tumata mate can be metami be'ohel. That is, that if the mate and the object are in the same ohel, the tuma can transfer. There's also what we call masa zav, is when a zav is carrying an object. Doesn't necessarily have to be directly carrying the object. Even if he's able to move the object through contact with another item, that's enough. It's called tumat hesed. He can metamate. So Rashi claims over here that it does not have tumat olamate because you need a toch. You need an internal receptacle for it to receive tuma. And for any tumat maga, also, you need to have it have a receptacle. A kli cheres is only metame mitocho from its internal receptacle. And therefore, you would require an internal side of it in order to be mekabel tuma. And that's why they say it's not metame mitumat olamate, it's not metame mitumat maga. Rashi says the exception to that is tumat hesed. Tumat hesed can be even from the outside of the kli, because even when you touch the outside of the kli and you move it, you're also, in a sense, moving the internal side of the kli. So tumat hesed is able to overcome the problem of having a toch or an internal receptacle. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot disagrees and he says, Rashi's explanation doesn't make so much sense because if without a toch, even tumat hesed doesn't apply. The reason that tumat hesed works when you touch the outside is because it's as if you move the inside. But it has to have an inside in order for it to have tumat hesed. And therefore Tosafot gives a different explanation for these ilfasin charaniyot, which is that he says they were actually stew pots that had a cover to them. So the pot was made with the cover, but when they were made as a single unit with a hole on the inside. So there was a hollow space on the inside, but they were made as a total, and then they would slice off the top to make the cover. So in this case, they took them, they used them without taking off the cover. So in that instance, tumat olamet is not going to apply because of a principle called samid patil. By olamet, the only thing that is mekabel tumah is something that's open. But something that's sealed is not mekabel tumah, even if it has a toch, even if it's an internal inside. So, or a receptacle on the inside. On the other hand, it does have a receptacle on the inside, and for tumat hesed, it will apply. So Tosafot claims that the object that we're talking about here is a pot of sort that was not yet opened. They're going to be opened in the future, and the tops will be sliced off, so that gives them a shame toch to them. But as far as tumat hamet and an ohel, they are sealed, and therefore the tumat does not penetrate to the inside. But tumat hesed will affect it because it does have a din of toch. So that is the statement of the Tanakhama. And then along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, according to Tosafot, and says you have to slice off the top in order for it to be a kli. That's the gemar hakli. And according to Rashi, you have to make it into a receptacle. You have to put a toch in it in order for it to become a kli. So Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok over here requires that gemar melacha. And therefore, he will be the author of our Mishnah who says that it's enough of a gemar melacha to do the final procedure before it's fired in the kiln. And he could be the author of our Mishnah. So now, once again, Amarle Abaye, Abaye queries his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, Dilma Adkan Lokama Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Tzadok, Hotam El Dechazi Lekbulei Bei Midei, because it has an ability to receive something, and has a receptacle of a Hocha, by our lamp, Lamai Chazi Lekbulei Bei, what can you put inside of it? And again, the Gemara answers, Pshite, you can put inside of these copper coins. So Tan Rabbanan, Ein Po Chatim Etaner, Ve'inosim ilfasim charaniyot b'yom tov. You're not going to make either of these items in Yom Tov. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel matir b'ilfasim charaniyot. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says these ilfasim charaniyot are fine. Mai charaniyot. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, iraniyot. They are provincial types. Mai iraniyot. I'm Rabbaye, tzaye chaklayato. These are the peasant trenchers, or basically the kelim, the utensils of the villagers. So these are much more provincial, not city or people who live in the main areas. These are people more in the outskirts, people who live out in the villages. So these are their kelim, so they're not as fine as Rashi says, or they're willing to use them in more of an unfinished state. Now the Gemara moves on to the next part of the Mishnah. Ve'ein osim pechamim. You're not allowed to make charcoal. Gemara says, pshita, my chazi. What are you going to do with it? I mean, why are you making charcoal? What can you utilize it for on Yom Tov? So Tani Rabbi Chia, lo nitzricha el lemosran lo yarin. You want to hand it over to the bath keeper. Now the Olarayin are the bath caretakers who heat up the baths. They take care of the towels. They take care of everything there. They took care of the bath houses in general. So now he's going to heat it up. Olarayin lebobayom. Mar says lebobayom mishari. Wait a minute. Why are you going to hand him charcoal in order to heat up the water for you when you can't bathe on Yom Tov anyway? So Kedama Rova. So this is similar to Rova Sigamur in Brachot, where he says Lahazia. It's a case where he's going in for a shvitz. Bekodim Gzeira. There were stages. The Gemara in Shabbat talks about it. The Gemara in Brachot also speaks about it. That there were stages in the Gzeira in restricting bathing on Shabbat and on Yom Tov. The problem the Chachamim faced was that people were ending up heating up the water on Shabbat itself or on Yom Tov itself, which is impermissible. And they were heating up the water for the people and saying they did it before Yom Tov or before Shabbat. So the Gzira goes through stages where they start restricting, but they see people are still cheating. The last thing that they restricted was going in for a shvitz. So you didn't actually enter into the water, but you went in for a shvitz. So therefore, they thought that that would be okay. Eventually, the Gzira caught up with that because they were still heating up the water and or people were going in and saying they went to the shvitz and instead going into the bath. So in the end, they restricted that. But what he's saying is, this is speaking about this Braita that we quoted before is speaking about a case before that. And our Mishnah, which is talking about Pechamim, is talking about before that case. Before the Gzeira was put in place where they still could go in Lahazia, they could still go in for the Shvitz. Then they needed to heat it up. And he was making this charcoal in order to heat it up. Our case here is also the Lahazia Bekodim Gzeira. He was making the Pecham in order to utilize it for that. So the Gemara says, okay, we found a utility for the Pecham, but you're still not allowed to make it. Because it's the equivalent of metaken kli, you're making something a mana in a sense, and therefore you can't do this on Yom Tov. Now, even though it's not really a kli, but nevertheless it's used for, he says, Tzorfei Zahav, it's used for those people that are making gold, and the petila also, when you make the wicks, they're also making a kli because you're fixing it in a way that you can use it to light. So those are all the problems in our Mishnah, problems of metaken kli, or looking like metaken kli. So now the Gemara moves on to the last case, which is Vein Chotchim et Abtila L'Shnaim. Can't cut a wick in half to make it the right size to utilize in the lamp. So Gemara wants to know, Maishna B'Sakin D'Lo, why is it different when you cut with a knife that we say you can't do it because K'mitaking Mano? That because it's as if you are fixing a Kli or a Mitaking Kli. B'Ur Nami, when you do it through fire, Nami K'mitaking Mano. It's the same thing. You're doing it, fixing a Kli, or you're making it functional by putting it through the fire. So Tani Rabbi Chia Chutcha Be'ur Bifi Shtei Neirot. No, this is a not making it into a kli. What he does is he has two lamps next to each other and has a long wick. So he places the one end of the wick in one lamp, the other end of the wick in the other lamp, and then he lights the middle. By lighting the middle, then the flames will move towards the two sides of the lamps, and he will, in a sense, have cut the wick unintentionally, quote unquote, because he have, it was as if he lit the wick. But by lighting the wick, the two wicks will then proceed to move towards the lamps. And it doesn't look like he's being metaken mana. It looks like he's simply lighting the lamp. And since it doesn't look like he's being metaken mana, then we're not going to worry about it in that case. So Amar Rav Natan bar Abba Marav, Mochatin et Abtila b'Yom Tov. One can trim the wick on Yom Tov. So Mar wants to know, my Mochatin, what does this mean? Amar Rav Chanina bar Shlomaya la'aduye chushcha. To take away the snuff, the dark part of the wick. Rashi says, la'aduye is la'sir, just to remove it. He doesn't tell you how you remove it. From that, it sounds like you could roll it through your fingers or you can move it around. If you look in Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, mutar l'chotcha. You can cut it. You can cut off. You can trim the wick on Yom Tov without any problem. Tani bar kapara, vav dvarim, shisha dvarim ne'emru b'tila. There were six things said about a wick. Gimel l'hachmir, three of them are stringent, meaning that you may not do them on Yom Tov. The gimel l'hakel, and three of them are to the lenient side, meaning that you are permitted to do them on Yom Tov. L'hachmir, the three things you may not do with a wick on Yom Tov. Ein godim ota l'chadkila b'yom tov. One cannot twist a wick. One cannot make a wick or twine a wick on Yom Tov. Number two is v'ein mehavivin oto ba'ur. You can't singe it with a flame, with a fire on Yom Tov. V'ein chotchim oto l'shnayim. And you can't cut it into two to make it to the right size. So these three items are basically the creation of a wick. You are making a wick, and therefore it looks like metakin kli, and they are not permitted on Yom Tov. L'hakel, the three things that are permitted are memacha biyad, that you can rub it with your fingers, as Rashi says, that it's a tikkun kelachar yadhu, that is not the usual manner in making a wick or rolling a wick. So when you're rubbing it between your fingers, you're softening up the wick or rolling the wick, that's fine. B'shorah b'shemen, you can soak it in oil. V'chotcha ba'ur b'fish de neirot. And you can cut it with the fire when it's in two lamps. So that supports how we described before, the way that the fire helps over here. So now we have another statement from Rav Natan Bar Abba. He was the one who made the statement about Mochatim et Ptila b'Yom Tov, the one that's allowed to trim the wick on Yom Tov. And then we brought the statement from Bar Kapara that has the six items with regards to the wick, three that are restricted, three that are permitted. And all the things that are look like Metakin Kli or are Metakin Kli, we don't allow. Things that are more Kalachar Yad or smaller types of items, we allow you to do, whether it's Malacha Yad, Shorah B'Shemen, or cutting it with the fire into two wicks, that we allow. So now we have another statement, an agadic statement from Natan Bar Abba, Amarav, Atirei Bavel, Yordei Gehenom Heim. Those rich people of Bavel, they are deserving of going to the Gehenom because they don't perform tzedakah properly, they don't take care of other people, they are not Mirachim Al HaBriyot. Why is this? So now he disclaims, Ki Ha De Shabtai Bar Marinus, Shabtai Bar Minus was an individual who went to Bavel, Ikla Bavel. He went to Bavel, by Minayu Iska. He didn't have a way to make a livelihood. So he asked of those individuals, could he go into business with them, give me a partner? As Rashi says, that they go in, L'chatzi Schar. This is where it was a common practice in their day, that he would take merchandise, sell it for them, and he would take a percentage of the profits. V'yov lo hayovule. They didn't give it to him. Mizone. He asked them for some food, a way to have food or to eat. So mezanami lo zainu. And they did not feed him, they did not supply him, give him the wherewithal to eat. So, Ane Amar, he said, Hani, me Erev Rav ka'atu. These people are definitely from the Erev Rav. They're not part of Kor B'nei Israel. Dichdiv. How does he know that? Because it says, with regards to an Irani Dachat, those people that execute the Irani Dachat and carry out the punishment, in the end, Hashem promises them and says, V'natan lecha rachamim, I will make you merciful, v'riv chamcha, and then you will be merciful to others. So then the Gemara says, Kol merachim ala briyot, anybody who is merciful to others, meaning takes an interest in others' plight, and they take care of them, they take care of those that are less fortunate, b'yadua shu mizaro shel Avram Avinu. So then you know for sure that he's a descendant of Avram Avinu. Kol mishenu merachim ala briyot, anybody who doesn't have that, a person who is callous to the plight of others, someone who doesn't care when others who are less fortunate don't have, we know for certain that they are not from the Zer of Avram Avinu, and that's because the Pasuk ends with Kasher Nishba L'Avotecha, like I promised to your forefathers. So since the Pasuk ends with that, and the beginning is V'natan L'Racha Rachamim, they see a correlation between this Midah of Rachamim and the Avot, that the descendants of the Avot clearly have these Midot, and therefore, number one, these people in Bavel, these rich people in Bavel who do not act in this manner, are going to Gehinom. And number two is, he says they probably can't even be a part of Klal Yisrael, because this is Mi'afiyein. This is a character trait that is part of being a Jew. And a person who doesn't have this clearly comes from the Eruv Rav. Just interesting, that Pasuk in Dvarim that speaks about Natan Lecha Rachamim V'Yichamcha, is very interesting that the Sichut Mutzar Rav Shmulevitz discusses over there that it's a very interesting promise. Here are the people who are executing the Irani Dachat, that Hashem promises them that I will make you merciful, and therefore I will be merciful towards you. So what's interesting here is that it could just say that Hashem says to them, don't worry about it. I know what you're doing is harsh, and the things that you have to do are harsh, but nevertheless, I'll still be merciful towards you. But what the Simcha and Musar points out here is that Hashem can only grant a person or give to a person a midah that they have. So that a person acts in a certain way, Hashem will act midah connected midah in the same way or same manner towards that individual. So over here, these people have to do something that is less than pleasant in executing the city or killing people. Nevertheless, Hashem promises them to have natan lecha rachamim, that this execution, I will make sure that it doesn't change your character, doesn't change who you are, and you will still be a rachman. You will still be somebody who's merciful and cares about others, and therefore rechamcha, and therefore I could be merachem on you. So he points out that we see this many times in the Gemara with regards to other items, but he brings it together in a beautiful thought here, that if we want Hashem to act towards us in a certain manner, that we should treat others in that way. The whole world of midah connected midah is, if we act this way, Hashem acts in a similar way towards us. Similar to what the Gemara says, kol ha-mavir al midotav, that whoever is mavir al midotav, then Hashem is also mavir on him. So if we want Hashem to act in certain ways towards us and treat us in certain ways, then we should also act in those ways. We should be people who are of rachamim, so that Hashem is merachem on us. And so here, he learns that out of the pasuk here, which is an interesting structure, that when Hashem promises them that they will be rachmanim, he says, v'natan lecha rachamim v'richamcha. Alright, so now the Gemara continues with another agadic statement from Amar Rav Natan bar Abba Amar Rav. Kol ha-mitzapeh al shulchan acherim, olam chashech ba'do. Anybody who anticipates or looks forward to someone else's table, the world is like dark for him. What he sees in front of him is complete darkness. This is someone who's dependent on others. Shenamar, because they quote the pasuk from Yov, no deidu lalechem. He is wandering, he's searching about for lechem, meaning bread, but in a broader context for food. Aye, where is it? Yada ki nachon biyado yom choshech. Because he knows that if it's not in his hand, the day turns into night, turns into darkness. So those that don't have, it's dark for them, because they're always dependent on others, they're always relying on others. It's as if his life isn't a real life. It's because of this statement on Rabbanan, Gimel Chayim Einim Chayim. Three people, their lives as if they're not living. Meaning that their difficulties that they experience in their lives make it as if they're not living. And that they maybe even don't want to live, or they have a certain amount of Yeush from living because of the difficulties of their lives. So Elohim, who are these? The one is the individual that we just spoke about, someone who's dependent on others, who's always looking for his food to come from others. Umish ishto moshelet alav, someone whose wife rules over him, controls him. Umish yisurim moshlim bigufo, and someone who is always plagued by yisurim, by difficulties and pains. V'yeshomrim, and some include, af mishein lo chaluk echad, also someone who only has one garment to wear, which means that he can't really launder it, which means that he can't really take care of it, because he always has to wear it. The Tanakama, how come the Tanakama didn't mention this item? Ashar the Ma'ayin Bimaneh. The one thing that they were really worried about was lice, because if a louse is caught in the beged, if you launder it at least, then you could possibly get rid of them, so they won't bother you anymore. But if you always have to wear it and you can't launder it, then you don't have a way to clean it out or to take them out. So the Tanakama says, no, you can. You can look through it and you can pick them out, you can take them out, even if you don't launder it. Whereas the additional Vayeshomrim say, no, that being able to launder it is really the only way to take care of these situations, and therefore someone who only has one beged can launder it. So these individuals who have these difficulties, they are ever present, they're always there with them, and therefore it makes their life very difficult, and since it makes their life very difficult, that's what the Gemara says, Chayim Enam Chayim, because their experience is a perpetual experience of difficulty, and therefore it makes their life as if it's not worth living. Okay, next Mishnah. Ein shuvrim et acheres, ve'ein chotchim aniyar litzlo bo maliach. You can't break pottery, make shards, or break shards of pottery, or cut paper in order to roast salty fish on it. As Rashi says, they used to put it on the askala, which is like a grill, a metal grill. If you put the fish directly on it, it'll burn it. So they had to put something between the fish and the grill itself. So you're not allowed to make that item that they would sit between the fish and the grill. Vengorfim tanur vikiraim. One may not sweep out or clear out a tanur or kiraim on Yom Tov. Aval michabshin. One can't be mechabshim, as Rashi says, mashkivim et ha'efer v'afar. You can smooth out the ashes and the dust that is in there so that it'll be smooth. So you can push it down and flatten it out so that it won't touch items that are cooking in there, because if it touches the items, it'll burn them. So therefore, you're allowed to press it down or push it down. You can't sweep it out, but at least you can push it down. Now, in terms of sweeping out the oven or the kiraim or the stove, Rashi over here explains, im nafal l'tocho min ha'tefel v'atiach, if something fell into it, if some of the plaster or part of the oven fell in, you can't sweep it out. Because Rashi says, metake mono, it's like fixing a kli. V'atio kirabonon. This is according to the Rabbonon, d'amri makshiri ocho nefesh ar asur, that makshiri ocho nefesh cannot be done. So the preparation here of doing something too, in order to facilitate the ability of ocho nefesh, is not permitted. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, argues on them and says, makshiri ocho nefesh, that could not be done yesterday, are mutarim. And as Rashi points out, that this is according to that position of the Rabbanan, who do not permit makshiri ocho nefesh. You can't bring two barrels or jars towards each other in order to sit on top of them the pan. So you bring those two together, you put a fire between them and the space between them, and then you put a pan on top to cook it. You can't hold up a pot that is cooking with a bikat. Bikat is what you do when you chop the wood. When you split the wood, you get these wood wedges. So you can't use these wedges of wood in order to support the k'teira and then to put the fire in between them. V'chein badelet, and that's true also by a door, which the Gemara will discuss. V'ein manhigim et beima b'makel b'yom tov, you can't drive an animal with the stick on yom tov. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon matir, and Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon says it is mutar. Now all of these in the latter half of the Mishnah are problems when you place it on top. It's because it's mechseka ohel. It looks like you're making an ohel. Looks like you are being mitakein something, building something, because you're putting up walls and then putting something on the top, which is the equivalent of making an ohel. And so because of that, you can't do any of these items. Now, the last piece here, ain't sumchim k'teira b'bikat, Rashi says the havamino of the Gemara here, Mishnah here, is that these eitzim, the wood that you chopped, that you split, is designated to be used for burning and not for anything else. And therefore, it's muksa to any other usage or utility outside of using them to burn them and to use for fire. And therefore, if you use these wedges of wood, and it seems the makel also, the stick, since you're using this wood for something else, that's the problem here in these last couple of items in the Mishnah. And now the Gemara moves on and asks, my taima, what is the problem in our Mishnah? So he says, Mishum de kametakein mono, because you're making a kli. V'engor fim tanor v'kiraim. Tani Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef commanded Rabbi Nachman, v'im efshar lafot, if it's impossible to bake in there, elin mekein gorfo, unless you sweep it out, then mutar. Then it's mutar, and as Rashi says here, that's like Rabbi Yehuda. They're in the paskanim like Rabbi Yehuda, the machshir ochel nefesh, when it's efshar, mir of Yom Tov, because now it's a problem, then you're allowed to clear it out. So the statement here is, if it's impossible to utilize it, then you can clear it out. Rashi says that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, our Mishnah is going according to the Rabbonon. You could argue that they're both according to Rabbi Yehuda, and one case is a case where it's efshar, it was efshar meir of Yom Tov, and over here it was efshar meir of Yom Tov. Or even you could argue possibly in the position of the Rabbonon, where they don't allow makshiri ochel nefesh, maybe over here there would be a dispensation because it's inhibiting your ability to have simchat Yom Tov, and we're dealing with some sort of muksa problem, most likely, and not mitakin mono, that's a machloket. If that's the case, maybe even the Rabbonon would permit it over here. The bitu of the Rabbi Chiya, the wife of Rabbi Chiya, nafala aricha b'tanura. One of the bricks, or half a brick, fell into the tanur. One of the bricks that was a part of the oven fell into it. B'yom tov and yom tov. Amalav Rabbi Chiya says, chazi dana riftam al yoto bina. You know that I like my bread to be really good. And with the brick in there, it's going to block your ability to bake the bread properly. And you can sweep it out. It was a similar statement that Rabbi Yosef, we saw earlier, made to his wife. Azmele rovo l'shamei. Rovo says to his servant, Tveili Abzo, the Gemara here is Bar, the Bach takes out that Giritza. Go ahead and roast for me a duck. Vizdaher Micharucha, and make sure that it doesn't get singed, it doesn't get burnt. Meaning that make sure that it doesn't go so far down that it will touch that which the coals or the ashes that are at the bottom. Or, in the other sense, is you can sweep out, you can flatten out, you can move out those coals, because otherwise the duck will get burnt, and therefore do that so it doesn't have that problem. Amrle Ravina the Ravashi. Ravina says Ravashi. Amrle and Rav Acha Mihutzal. Rav Acha Mihutzal tells us the Mar Sharkin Le Tanura B'Yom Tova. We heard that you seal up your oven on Yom Tov. This was what they used to do when they baked or they cooked in their ovens. They used to seal them with the plaster around the outside so that the heat couldn't escape, so it would build up enough heat inside of it to cook. So it seems here that he says you're allowing them to do this. Isn't that a problem of Govel? Because when you make that plaster that goes around it, you have to mix the water with the dry good and then you have to knead it and make it. And it's a problem of Govel, Lisha, on Yom Tov. So why is this permissible to make it? So he says, Amarle, yes, we do this, but Anan Arakto de Prat Asamchinan. We don't make it out of this cement or plaster, but rather we use the clay that is around the river, the Euphrates. So it's already made. We don't have to mix it. It's ready made clay that's already there that we can take out. Vahani Mile Ditsaire Me'etmo. That's only if he designated it from beforehand, meaning that it's not muksa. If it's just go down to the river, you can't do that. You have to delineate it or designate it so it's not muksa. And therefore you can use it because it's ready made and we're just placing it around. So that's why I do it. It's not, it is what you said, but it's not exactly what you said because we're not making it from scratch. We have it ready made already. We already designated beforehand, so it's not muksa, and that's why we do it. Amaravina Bikitma Shari. Using ashes is permissible. Rashi says the use of ashes over here means that you can mix the ashes with water and you can be govel and you can mix them. Why? Because lav bar gibulhu. They're not normally mixed. And since they are lav bar gibulhu, it's not a problem of migavel, of mixing it in that manner. Tosafot thinks that that's incorrect. That is not the reason here. Vish lomar, dahachi retzon lomar, kitma shari klomar, bikitma shari listoma stiga shel tanur. That's what it says, anything that you put water into and a dry hood and you mix them together and it makes it into a more dough-like substance is a problem of Megavel. So that's the same thing over here. So he says it's definitely the case. Kit Mashari means you can use the ashes when you don't mix them with water. And that's what he's saying. Kit Mashari means that you can use ashes to seal around the oven even though you haven't, when you haven't put water in them. And therefore, it's fine. Or, that's what it says, it's the case, Shagav lo me'erev Yom Tov. If you mixed it in water before Yom Tov, then you can utilize it on Yom Tov itself. You can't bring two barrels, jars together, and then place an object on the middle. Amar Rav Nachman, Avanim shel Beit HaKisei. One wants to create a toilet. He brings two stones together, and then the person sits on it and uses that as his toilet. Mutar letzadadan b'Yom Tov. You can move them together in Yom Tov and then sit on top of them. So Eit ve'Rabo, the Rav Nachman, so Rabo or Rovo, as the other possible gear, so asked Rav Nachman, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says you can't bring two barrels together in order to put the pan on top of them. Problem over there is that he's making an Ohel. You have the two sides, the two barrels, and then you're putting the pan on top. Over here, you're simply bringing the rocks together, and then the individual's sitting on it, but you're not making an Ohel. So Amalei Rabazuto the Ravashi. So then Rabbi Zuta asks Ravashi, Elamiatov, that's the problem. All the problem here is making an Ohel. Then it's the Babi Yom Tov, Dolo Avid Olo, Achinami Deshari, making an Itzdaba, making a pillar of sorts. These were short pillars that were used either as foundations or supports for buildings, or they also were used to make benches that were around. They had them up on Harabayit. The Gemara discusses that, that they were these colonnades that were up there, and they used them as they had platforms on top, you could sit on them. But these are solid objects that are used to swamp. They're definitely called building, but they're not an ohel because you're not making walls and then a roof on them and having something underneath them, a hollowed space out of them. So he's saying if the whole problem is ohel, then making an itzdaba is considered to be mutar. Amalei, hotam binyan keva, asra Torah. Over there, you're making a permanent structure. That is asur min haTorah. Binyan arai lo asra Torah. Temporary structures the Torah does not restrict. V'gazru abanan am binyan arai mishum binyan keva. The Chachamim came along and said that temporary structures are problematic because of permanent structures. V'ahacha mishum kvodo lo gazru bei rabbanan. And over here by the bathroom, because of kvod ha-briyot, the rabbanan would not go there. So he says basically the making of an ohel is problematic, even when it's a temporary ohel. Temporary ohel is problematic because mid rabbanan where goes there because you make something a permanent structure. So we don't allow even temporary structures to be made. So in the case of itzdaba, you're talking about a permanent structure. It doesn't matter if it's an O or not. That's binyan, and there's nothing to talk about. Ohel, well, you have cases where, oh, something temporary. Here, where you put two barrels together, you're putting a kdeira, a pan on top of them. That's temporary. The Chachamim restricted you doing such a thing because you might come to make a permanent structure. But I left a dispensation for people who need to go to the bathroom that they can bring together those two rocks and they can sit on top of it because of Kavod HaBriyot. So there's a dispensation that for me, the Rabbanan, we're not gozer in that case. So that's why that is the exception to the rule. But there are different stages. Now we have Binyan Keva is always problematic, whether it's an Ohel or not an Ohel. Arai is only problematic when it's an Ohel. And it's a, because Midr Rabbanan, we're gozer to Binyan Keva. And there's an exception to that, or an exception from that, for Kavod HaBriyot. Now the next statement we have here, Amar of Yehuda. Hai Medurta, Milamalo Lamato Shari, Milamato Lamalo Asur. So these pyres, or piles that they make for the fire, they pile up the wood to make a fire, so they create a quasi-tipi, a structure around that's hollow in the middle, and then they light the fire in the middle, and then the wood or the structure on the outside acts as the fuel for the fire and becomes a big pyre. So this, milamalo lamato shari, you can build it from top down, but milamato lamalo asur, but building it bottom up is asur. And this is a basic concept in Olel. We learned this in the Gemara and Sukkah as well. In order to have a roof put up, a roof is only a roof once there are walls. So if you put up the walls first, and then you put the top on, then you have a problem of Ohel. So therefore, if you build it bottom up, you're going to have a problem of Olari. On the other hand, if you build it top down, which is that you have the top pieces and the roof part done, and then you slide in the walls afterwards, that's not the typical way to make an Ohel. Since it's not a typical way to make an Ohel, they weren't gozer in that case because of Olari. So he's saying to you, if you're going to make this pile of wood, this pyre, make sure you make it top down and not bottom up. V'chein be'ata, so too by an egg. Rashi says over here that it's talking about a case where you have a kli chalul, you have a hollow utensil, like a tripod, and then, or you're putting it on the grill, and you can't put a kli on it first, and then put on top of that the egg. So you can first put up the items that are going to hold it up, and then put the item that you're going to cook on top of it, because then you're quasi-creating an ohel. That's the way Rashi describes it. Tosfot, on the other hand, disagrees and says that the difference here is, or the items that are restricted over here, are items that have solid walls to them. If the walls that you put up are hollow walls or just a frame, then it's no problem to put the object on top. The only time it's a problem is that when you put the items there that become solid walls and then place something on top of it. So Tosfot explains that the biata here is that he has beitzimikan or beitzimikan. He has eggs on both sides and then one on top of them. So he's made like a two eggs that support other eggs. And that's problematic because you have solid walls around it. So that's how he explains v'chein biata, beata, and he also explains the remainder of these cases in a similar manner. V'chein k'deira, the k'deira like we have in our Mishnah. When you put on the pot on top of two chaviot, you can't first put up the barrels and then put the pot on top. V'chein puraya, and the same thing with the bed. You can't put out the mattress or the frame of the bed first after you put up the legs. V'chein chavito, and the same thing is true with the chavit, the chaviot that we had in our Mishnah, as well as the chaviot that you store in the cellar. When you put them in there, you're stacking them one on top of the other. So in all these cases, what you cannot do is put the walls up first, or the structure first, and then put the one on top. So we'll go backwards. We'll start with the barrels. You can't put down two barrels and then stack a third barrel on top of them. What you first have to do, you bring the first barrel you want to put on top, you hold it up, and then you slide the two other barrels underneath it. Similar to the suggestion Rabbi Yehuda made by the Medurta. By the Puraya, by the bed, the same thing. The way they made their beds, or the beds that were dismantled, is that you had a equivalent of mattress, which was a skin or ropes that went in the middle. And then you had a frame that was put up around it. What it says is don't put up the frame first and then put in that throw in the middle and tie it onto the sides because that's equivalent to making an oval. You're putting up the sides and then the middle. First of all, hold the throw up or the frame up and then slide in the legs that hold it up afterwards. And then same thing with a kedera. Don't have the barrels or jugs next to each other and place the pot on top of them to cook. Rather hold the pot that you want to cook up first and then slide in the barrels underneath. And Be'ata, we already discussed the difference between Tosafot and Rashi over here. Ve'ain samchim et k'deira b'bikat. Our Mishnah says you can't hold up the k'deira with the bikat, with these wood wedges. Chein bedelet. And also true with the door. Bedelet salkadatcho. What's the problem of holding up a pot with a door? Eleima v'chein ha'delet. And so too it is by a door. You can't hold up the door with these wedges of wood. So Tan Rabbanan. Ve'ain samchim et k'deira b'bikat. V'chein ha'delet. The fee, Shelo nitnu etzim ela hasaka. Because the primary and only purpose that a person has these wood, because it's been cut, it's been split, this wood is specifically to use for hasaka, for burning on Yom Tov. So you're actually mekatze, not midat, but you mekatze it for a single utility. And that's the only utility that you can have with it. So when you use it for other items, that's a problem of mukse. Rabbi Shimon matir. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. Ve'ein manigim et beima b'makel b'yom tov. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon matir. So in this case, the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakama is a problem of mukse. So the Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda, says that etzim are only utilized for asaka, therefore they're mukse, and you can't utilize them for something else. Rabbi Shimon's matir because he doesn't have an issue of mukse. Ve'ein manigim et beima b'makel, you can't drive the animal with the staff on Yom Tov. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon says mutar. Lema, let us suggest for Belozer Rabbi Shimon Kavuasvirle, that he holds like his father that it's no muksa problem, delately muksa. So therefore, what the problem here with the makel, the stick, is similar to the problem with the wood wedges, which is it's a problem of muksa. It says, lo, the ha, filu Rabbi Shimon molde. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees here that it's problematic. Shum de mechse, kiman de azil de chinga. Because it looks like a person is going to a party. A chinga is a machol. It's a dancing around in a circle. It's a celebration. The Targum Unculus on the Torah translates when it comes to the Chet Ega, when Bnei Yisrael are dancing around the Ega, he calls that a Chinga. So here, when you're taking out to the Chinga, it's a euphemism for taking out to the Shuk, the place where people circle around, whether that's because they circle around with their merchandise or people go around looking for their merchandise, but you take it with a stick and drive with a stick. It looks like you're taking it for long distance, or you're taking it to the marketplace. So that's why it's restricted. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees it's not an issue of Muksa. It's a problem of, it doesn't look right. It looks like you're doing uvdin d'chol. It looks like you're doing something that you normally do on a weekday. And therefore he agrees here, even though it's not a problem of muksa. Nevertheless, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon doesn't see that as a problem and says that you can do this on Yom Tov. So here we had a series of items that were problematic in our Mishnah. We had the first set of items, which are problems of making kelim. We had the second set of items, which were problems of ohel or ohel arai. And including the bikat and the delet, you can't support things with wood wedges because of the problem of mukse, because they have a specific designation. So you can't support, whether it's a pot, whether it's a door, with these wood wedges because they are designated for burning. Anyway, the last item in the Mishnah is that you can't use the staff to drive the animal on Yom Tov because it looks like you're taking him to the shul. It's a problem of uvdei chol. Okay, we'll stop over here.